It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. It is Friday, and with everything that's happened at Trump Tower, in Congress, and under Atlanta's Gold Dome, we are past due for another political breakfast. Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson are back. Theron is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director of President Obama's 2012 campaign. Brian is a Republican strategist and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Welcome back, guys.
Happy New Year, man.
To be here, Dennis.
Brian, let's start with your former boss. Governor Nathan Deal gave his State of the State message this week, and he changed his education priorities. Instead of trying to overhaul the state's old funding formula for local schools, something he wanted to do, he decides instead to focus on what you might call school takeover light, a second try at trying to help struggling schools via the state.
I think if you look at the undercurrents of his speech, he was saying, let's focus on our most pressing needs in the state this session and skirt off to the side these controversial hot-button issues that divide us. On education, he has a passion for children who are trapped in failing schools, whose futures are dimmed by a lack of opportunity.
But I asked him during the conversation I had with him last week, why not do both? Why not fix the funding formula, which affects many more schools, while focusing on those chronically failing schools, which are quite a few, but in the grand scheme of things, they're only a small part of the education picture.
What did he say?
He said,
well, it's a question of money. What you're going to see us doing is focusing on elementary schools, because if we can begin to fix the problems of children who can't read, of children who can't do basic math by the time they leave elementary school, we can begin to solve some of the long-term issues of high school dropouts, of those who wind up in our prisons, and those who wind up on our welfare rolls.
Well, I do think that perhaps we could have gotten to funding formula if Opportunity Schools had been passed in November. That would have taken care of that, gotten that off of the legislative agenda. But as he said in the speech on Wednesday, he is seeing a rise in the number of failing schools in the state. That means tens of thousands of more children than we even thought are in schools that aren't passing muster. Those kids aren't going to get the job force skills that they need to be successful. They're not going to have the skills that we need to attract new industry to this state and to fill the jobs that are already here. It is a recipe for disaster for the future. We've got to fix it. He is right, and I'm so glad to see Republicans in the General Assembly rallying behind, even after that vote in November, because we know we have to do something for these kids.
Look, I want to be the first to say that I commend Governor Deal for wanting to do something about education in our state. I've said that many times before. He is to be commended. The first step is that I think that the governor scaled back his plan because he had to really dissect and listen to the voters. What the voters said to him in November is that we don't want the state governments, many of them state bureaucrats, controlling what's going on in our local schools. Don't take away our local control. You know, and so I think what you saw in the speech on Wednesday was a realistic approach to hopefully work across the aisle and work with the different organizations to improve education.
Can he work across the aisle and get Democratic support, though, if his plan includes what many believe will be a part of it, which is kids in chronically failing schools can transfer?
Well, he mentioned that in the speech, and he listed out members of the General Assembly who were involved, and there were Democrats on that board. You know, one of them is Freddie Powell Sims of Albany, who was a vocal supporter of helping these children when so many Democrats in the General Assembly abandoned those children. And I was really upset to see Senator Vincent Fort's rhetoric in today's news attacking Governor Deal for trying to help failing schools, for trying to help these children that he should be concerned about.
The best advice I can give my Republican friend Brian Robinson is this. Here we are again at the beginning of the session, and we're still using the term failing. What the governor has done is that he has not come out and publicly said that there are schools in our state that are improving. There are schools in our state that are improving that are on this so-called failing list higher than the state average. You've got to get away from this negative stigma that you put on these parents, these hardworking students, these families, and more importantly, these teachers by saying that they're operating in quote-unquote failing schools. Until the Republicans realize that this is a messaging problem. Brian gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to teach Republicans, to train them how to message to voters. I cannot believe that here we are in the beginning of this year, and I'm still hearing Republicans use the word failing. Now, what do we do to your question, Dennis? Yes, I think Democrats are in a wait-and-see posture. They heard a good speech that had a lot of proposals from the governor. Now they're waiting for the actual legislation in the print to be put on paper. And then I think you will see a lot of compromising that goes on. But what I'm not going to do is allow Brian and the governor and Republican leadership to criticize Democrats like Vincent Ford and others, and Calvin Smyer, who's come out on your show, Dennis, and spoke about waiting to see what the governor will do, to say that Democrats don't support better education in the state, that we don't support ending chronically failing schools that can improve. We as Democrats support that. And guess what? More importantly, the Democrats have the voters on our side, and that's why they rejected this OSD proposal in November.
You know, it's ironic that Republicans have controlled this state for so long, yet it is the Democrat establishment that is the arch defender of the status quo.
But to your point about defending, if the governor really wanted to do something about education, Dennis, he would fully fund it. And that's the bottom line. Fully fund education. Stop creating this red tape and putting these Band-Aids on some of these problems that you think we have across the state. Fully fund education.
He's added $1.2 billion, as he said in his speech on Wednesday. What is enough?
Well, how much of that, though, was because of growth? Just
some of
more
it.
More students.
A
some
lot of it, yeah.
But 50%. But it's a matter of priorities. Budgets are about priorities. 50% of new revenue coming into the state treasury has gone to K-12 education under Governor Deal. That shows you his real-world commitment to making sure teachers get competitive salaries and that schools have the resources they need to educate children.
Real quickly, on another point, Brian, you mentioned the governor trying to avoid maybe some long-running fights this session. That came up when I asked him about opioid addiction. Mm-hmm. He is trying to address the opioid addiction problem in this state, partly through getting the legislature to turn his executive order into law, which would basically say you can get that emergency fix drug naloxone, I believe,
yes,
over the counter. I asked him, though, about the state medical board. Shouldn't they have tougher enforcement powers with doctors who overprescribe or don't check enough about people who are doctor shopping to get opioids, for instance? He seemed to want to avoid a fight with the medical establishment on this.
But, you know, he did allude to your issue that you're raising here in his speech on Wednesday, that we need to take a look at in educating the medical establishment about the dangers of overprescribing painkillers that have an opioid base, because when those get to be too expensive or when the insurance cuts off, those folks, not just in Georgia but across the country, and probably our problem in Georgia isn't as bad as it is in many other places, they turn to heroin because it's much, much cheaper. Mm-hmm. And now because of what it's mixed in with, it is deadly. And it is one of the main reasons why the life expectancy of Americans is shrinking right now. It is epidemic in this country. So I'm very proud of Governor Deal for addressing what in the past was, you know, a hot rail that you couldn't, that would shock you if you touched it. He's been very courageous when it comes to dealing with treatment of mental illness, with drug addiction, particularly in the criminal justice system. And he mentioned also our need as a state to find PTSD treatment for our returning veterans. It is going to be one of those things that we have to deal with for the next generation. It's very possible that the shootings in Fort Lauderdale were from someone who was suffering from this plague, and it is deadly, and these people aren't bad people. They need help.
I can't help but notice that, Dennis, it gives me the impression that Brian Robinson had a lot of intel and a lot of input in this State of the State speech by the governor because of his enthusiasm and making sure that he gets in all of the points that the governor made that day.
I had nothing to do. I give Jim Taliaferro and the writing crew to get all the credit.
Theron, you referred to Democrats and wait and see. The Republicans in the state are taking a wait and see approach, too. Actually, everybody at the Capitol seems to be, to see whether or not Republicans at the federal level repeal and replace Obamacare. And this week, President-elect Trump said, as soon as you all confirm my Health and Human Services Secretary nominee, Georgia's Tom Price, then we'll get the replacement that you all are waiting for. Was this a threat so much, or was it a chance for everybody to slow down and take a look at public opinion polls, at the various possible solutions that Republican leaders might offer?
I think it was a strategy by President-elect Trump to slow this down. I mean, he is dealing with the Russian conspiracy theory that is basically, I think, delegitimizing his presidency before he actually even gets sworn in as a president. And so what you see is that the Republicans in the state of Georgia has taken this approach to say, hey, let's just wait and see what the federal government does. My response to that, Dennis, is that, okay, that may make sense because you definitely want to cooperate now with the federal government, i.e. a president-elect who's a Republican. But the fact still remains is that what has the governor and the state Republican leadership done until this point? The governor and the Republican leadership has had over 5 years to do something about health care in this state. Right now, we know that 75% of Georgians want him to expand Medicaid. Many of these folks out of the 75%, 58% of them are Republicans that want the governor to expand Medicaid. And so I think this sort of wait-and-see posture to wait to see if someone is confirmed to decide if we're going to do something about making sure that we don't continue to close rural hospitals in our state, to make sure that we eliminate this gap funding that we have for about 500,000 people who don't have access to Medicaid or Medicare because they're in that middle. It's just something that I think that the Georgian voters are paying very close attention to.
I think mid-February probably is a realistic timeline as far as getting a plan together, because getting a plan together is going to take a lot of thought and compromise and building bridges to get something together, because there's going to be winners and losers in any new step forward. I'm glad to see on the state level that we're beginning to take steps to get ready for the replace, because we don't have two more years of the status quo. We're going to lose a lot of healthcare infrastructure if we go on the path we are. They need to get it fixed immediately. The governor said Wednesday he doesn't want to see giant leaps until we know what Congress is going to do. But Lieutenant Governor Kasich Cagle has a plan out and a committee out to study the repeal and replace and what we can do to be ready. So hopefully the Tom Price confirmation will give us some time. And having a Georgian in that position is going to be so huge for us when it comes to getting a flexible, perhaps even a block grant Medicaid approach that'll make us able to cater it to our specific needs in Georgia and rescue our healthcare network, which is really getting flushed down the toilet right now.
I totally agree with Brian that we are all beneficiaries of having Chairman Congressman Tom Price in this role as Health and Human Services Secretary. The one thing that happened this week, Dennis, that I want to point out, Democrats did this sort of Votorama technique to really put forth amendments to force the Republicans to vote on amendments that would put them basically on the record for whether they're going to expand Medicaid, what they're going to do to make sure that the repeal process actually works towards a fair replacement. So that's something that's very close to watch.
And while we thought maybe Georgia Republicans would be in the spotlight during these confirmation hearings this week, it was actually some Georgia Democrats who took center stage, weighing in on both sides of a couple of the president-elect nominees. John Lewis, Atlanta congressman, speaking against Jeff Sessions, the nominee for attorney general, and Sam Nunn introducing a couple of the president-elect's nominees for Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State.
You know, that's why we all love Congressman John Lewis. That's why I'm so proud to call him my congressman and to have had the pleasure of working for him. If you really listen to his testimony, if you really listen to the things that he brought up, it is valid concerns that American people should really pay close attention to. He was not afraid, and he reminded people that Senator Sessions is a person that may have evolved over time and has probably wanted to recant some of the very racist, inappropriate statements that he's made about people of color and about organizations that serve not only people of color, but social justice organizations. And so I was very happy to see the congressman do what we really vote for him to go up to Washington to do every day, and it's to make sure that we hold these people accountable. And so his testimony, I think, raised a lot of eyebrows from people because he is the conscience of Congress. And I think that this hearing is going to really have some troubling days.
You know, you also saw another Georgian, Larry Thompson, a former U.S. attorney and African-American, who was sitting there right behind Jeff Sessions, offering his support. And I think it's really telling that you've seen these African-Americans, many African-American Southerners who have worked for Jeff Sessions or worked with him, who are coming out and saying, this man is a good man. This is character assassination. This is a political gamesmanship. It does not reflect who he is as a person. And the fact that the real problem that Democrats have with Jeff Sessions is that he's got a consistent conservative voting record.
The Sam Nunn appearances, in a way, kind of highlight what Georgia is trying to get now. Sam Nunn was one of those who brought a lot of heft to Georgia's influence at the U.S. Capitol. And he was one of a long line of people who did that, ending with Speaker Gingrich. And it was kind of, in a way, a reminder, Georgia's trying to get there again, isn't it?
I'm so glad to see Senator Sam Nunn stepping back into the national spotlight, because even though he's no longer a household name, probably not even in Georgia anymore, he is still a respected voice within these circles because he had such a distinguished record in the Senate over a 24-year period. And yes, Georgia's stature, since he and Speaker Gingrich have stepped down, has declined somewhat. I think you're seeing that replaced somewhat by the growing stature of Senator Johnny Isaacson. You're seeing it in the growing stature of Congressman Tom Price, who's going to be one of the most powerful cabinet secretaries out there, and Congressman Tom Graves, also, who is rising to the ranks of leadership in the House, and of course, Senator Perdue, who is in the Trump inner circle, and we'll see how much juice he has if he can get his cousin in as the Secretary of Agriculture, which would be another huge boon for the state of Georgia if former Governor Sonny Perdue gets that lofty spot, which oversees our number one industry in the state, agriculture.
Theron, you're maintaining a polite silence, I see, so we'll move right on very quickly to a couple more things here. Let's pick up on campus carry, going back to the state capitol for a moment. The sponsor of last year's bill, the bill that Governor Deal vetoed, Theron, has landed as the chair of the House Higher Education Committee. In other words, the committee that oversees the operations of the higher education system.
This is a very interesting development.
There's a message there to the governor, it seems.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Representative Jaspers has been the person for many years now that has reintroduced time and time again this sort of guns everywhere bill. To have him now be the chair of the Higher Education Committee is a clear signal to the governor, and it should be a clear signal to our listeners that this is something that is going to be front and center again. Now, listen, I have said this before. I commended Governor Deal for vetoing this bill. It was a very bad bill, but it also highlights, to Brian's conversation earlier in this segment, about how the governor has this very ambitious platform. I seem to believe, Dennis, that there are some Republicans, more than we probably know of, that are actually upset with the governor for vetoing campus carry and also vetoing a religious liberty bill. This is something that the governor is going to have to tread very lightly with. But I totally think that putting Representative Jaspers in this position as chairman of the Higher Education Committee, knowing that he's going to reintroduce again a campus carry bill, is not good for the governor.
And Brian, when I asked the governor about this last week, he was very careful not to rule out any form of campus carry bill.
Well, last year there was news coverage of the fact that he sent a handwritten note to House and Senate leadership on what it would take to get him to sign it. I believe it already was too far along in the process for them to revisit it, or at least they thought so. That ended up in a veto. Where I disagree with Theron is I think a lot of Republicans in the General Assembly, certainly not all, but many, are glad the governor vetoed those two bills because it allowed them to go out and vote for it and please the constituencies that desperately want those two pieces of legislation, while at the same time not having to deal with the real-world repercussions of what those bills would do.
So does this move to put Representative Jaspers as chair of higher ed set up some kind of campus carry fight again in the legislature?
One thing Speaker Ralston said at the beginning of the week is we're going to send signals in various ways that there is a separation of powers, that we have an important role in lawmaking in this state, and we don't take our orders from the second floor. He didn't say it in exactly that, those harsh terms, but that was sort of his message. And this may be one of those ways he sends that signal that we're going to be different. We don't have to agree on everything. We can have different priorities and different viewpoints on this issue. It's healthy. I think at the end of the day, if he gets something that's like they got last year, the governor's going to veto it again.
The fact that I'm sitting here listening to Brian sort of defend a reason and trying to make logic out of why Republicans should reintroduce a campus carry bill at a time when we are seeing massive murders with people who have access to guns, many of whom are mentally ill, on college campuses and airports. It just shows to me how out of touch Republicans are in the state.
We don't have near the epidemic that Theron's good friend Rahm Emanuel has as mayor of Chicago, where they have very strict gun control laws and they have murder out of control up there.
One other issue, casinos. There were some quiet visits to the governor's office this past week by some of the key legislative supporters of some kind of casino bill. It's been bubbling under the surface for a while, Theron. Do you think we will see a bill which not only legalizes casinos but ties them to funding for the Hope Scholarship, for instance, with percentages of how much revenue would go to Hope, and really a bill that will be big and ambitious?
Full disclosure, I'm a lobbyist for MGM, which is one of the many now casinos, destination resort casinos, that are actually supporting a constitutional amendment that will have enabling legislation to do so. I will tell you, Dennis, that I think that the conversations that are needed to be had are actually happening. I think that you see on both sides of the aisles a meeting of the mind. I'm very happy to really report that this is a conversation that people are coming to very open-minded. So I think you will see some legislation that will come out very soon, and hopefully it'll pass, and then Georgia voters will get a chance to vote on it.
But, Brian, even if Georgia voters say yes to legalizing casinos, the enabling legislation to set them up would still have to get past the governor.
That's true. And so he does have a role in this process, even though he doesn't sign off on constitutional amendments. He does sign off on the enabling legislation. And there are several things that he's interested in. He wants to know particularly where the money is going to go, where the tax revenue is going to go, and how that's going to be earmarked. He obviously has a heart for education. He has a heart for making sure that kids who work hard and do good can afford to go to college. And so I think he's going to be looking at some needs-based scholarships for this money. This can be one of his priorities. And one thing I would encourage the governor and legislators to look at is, how are these casinos going to impact the communities where they are located? Because casinos are legally treated differently because they're special. That's why we need a constitutional amendment to get them done. Let's make sure that we're not going to destroy local restaurants, local entertainment venues, that we have some sort of partnership and understanding of how these may impact surrounding businesses.
But real quickly, the governor had said early in his term that he opposed any expansion of gambling in the state. Is tying it directly to education funding, particularly needs-based education funding, the way to convince him to change his mind?
I think that's going to be a major tug at his heartstrings. You know, one thing he had said before the last election was, if you can get the constitutional amendment passed, then I'll work with you on enabling legislation. That's no longer possible because after the next election, he will be retired in a rocking chair in Habersham County over the Chattahoochee River. So now the scenario has changed and he's got to act. If he wants to have a role in this, he's got to do it now.
Education plays a big part in it, and we know that the Hope Scholarship is paramount in Georgia because of what it does for our young people who want to aspire to get college education. The other thing that the governor is paying very close attention to, at a time when we want to market ourselves as the number one place to do business, the amount of jobs that this will bring to Georgia, particularly in this metro region, is something that I think he's paying very close attention to.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director of President Obama's 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist and a former Deputy Chief of Staff for Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Thanks to both of you. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Dennis. And I know as we close on the expanded version, I just want to say how happy I am to really see my president and your president and Brian's president, Obama, really do a wonderful farewell address to the American people. He's going to be missed. I think Brian's going to come in here really soon and realize how much he misses President Obama.
And I want to wish everyone a very special, happy day on for Martin Luther King Jr. holiday on Monday, and take a look at the Ebenezer service where you're going to see Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson there as he is every year. And a new addition, my good friend, Attorney General Chris Carr, will be there speaking as well. I'm very proud of them. And the signal that they send by being there and marking this very special day where Georgia has such a unique national spotlight because that American hero is one of our own.
I just really hope that while they're joined by Bernie Sanders, who will actually be there, your favorite guy, that they'll have the spirit to really expand Medicaid and to make
and
sure.
And I hope Raphael Warnock doesn't politicize what should be a holiday for us all.
Thanks to both of you. We really appreciate it.